Good morning. Good morning and welcome again to the 2017 Real Estate Prayer Breakfast. My name is Sam Chambliss, and I'm a commercial real estate attorney with Chambliss and Fawcett. Proverbs 16:9 says this, "In his heart a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps." Ever since I could remember, I wanted to be a lawyer. It's kind of a nerdy thing, but my dad was a lawyer, and if your name was Chambliss and you're in Chattanooga, you're supposed to be a lawyer. My mom was not exactly excited about the idea because my dad left her with three little kids when I was three. But that was the course I had set out for my life. And when I was in law school, I got a dream job from Atlanta's largest law firm, Alston and Byrd. And as soon as I started doing commercial real estate, I was totally hooked. And I worked with the best of the best lawyers and mentors, and I learned everything that I wanted to know about all types of commercial real estate. And everything was on an upward course. And meanwhile, my wife Elizabeth, who is here this morning, and I had our first child in 1987. I started working there in 85. We had our first daughter, Carter, in 87. Our second daughter, Ansley, in 89. And in 1990, we outgrew our first house in Collier Hills, nestled behind Piedmont Hospital, and bought a bigger house with a bigger mortgage. And things were great. And then in late 1990, I experienced the secret of the real estate industry, which was a recession. And work slowed down, and it continued to slow down until I found myself on May 15th of 1991 sending out what we called a two-week exit memo. And that's to every lawyer in the firm. It's a piece of paper. These are the days before the interwebs. And I announced that I was leaving this huge firm to go start my own little law practice with another lawyer from there. And I would say that was a pretty big disruption in the plan that I had set out for my life. Now, something else was going to happen on that day of May 15th. So I'll back up a little bit. Elizabeth and I had fairly recently joined a new church in Atlanta, and it was considered very conservative. And Elizabeth was where she needed to be from a spiritual standpoint, but I definitely was not. I was very complacent going to church once a week, and I was not interested in Bible studies and men's fellowship stuff and small groups. Just because somebody goes to church on a regular basis or once a week does not mean that person is a Christian believer. And by that I mean I had not yet reached the point in my life where I had grasped the truth of the gospel that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He was prophesied through the Old Testament. He was born of virgin birth. He walked among people of all walks of life. He made disciples of people to go after him. He died by being crucified on a cross, and on the third day he was resurrected. And he came back to the people, and he promised to them, and he promises to us now, that if we accept the truth of that gospel, and we agree to follow him, that we can have eternal life. He promised us that. He didn't say your life is suddenly going to be easy because you're now a believer, but he did say, I will never leave you or forsake you, and I will always be with you. I was not quite on that bandwagon yet. You might be surprised. Sometimes lawyers take longer than others to kind of come around to agree to something. our church put on a prayer breakfast. And it was a lot like this prayer breakfast. And it was in this exact room right here. And as a member of the church, I hosted a table and invited guests. And one of my guests said he wanted to attend a follow-up gathering. And I was invited to go with him, and I reluctantly agreed. It was just not my cup of tea, but I agreed to do it. And that was scheduled for May 15th of 1991. And as I stand before you, that is not what I wanted to do on that day of days. That was a red letter day. I wanted to go home, put my feet up, and relax. But I had that hanging over my head. And the guy canceled on me, and I was excited, called the host of that gathering, and said, he's not coming. And the guy said, well, you're welcome to come. And I wanted to say no, but I said yes, and I don't know why. A man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. And it was at that small group meeting that it was explained so well, and it finally clicked with me. And I prayed and made a decision to follow Jesus Christ. Now, there were no thunderbolts or claps of lightning, but I knew something was very different because I really wanted to study the Bible. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be part of a small group or men's fellowship, and that's what I was encouraged to do, so I did. And that God got me through that early 90s recession, and he blessed my law firm. And he would also get me through the worst recession since the Great Depression in the 2008 years, which Chevy Chase would call a bag over the head punch in the face. And all of us here understand how bad that recession was. And it took years to get over that, but God saw me through it. Because he said, I will never leave you or forsake you. Now, I kind of want to get away from talking about recessions and stuff because I'd like to share some personal challenges I faced as a father and as a son. Our first son, Bo, who is here this morning, thank you, you're here, arrived in 1992, and he was followed by Jenny in 1994. And then we were pregnant with number five, and yes, we did plan for him. He was not a surprise. And we scheduled a level two ultrasound, which is the newfangled thing you could do of the day. It was better than a regular ultrasound. Now they have 3D, and I think you get glasses with that. But we met with a doctor who had studied everything in the videos and the photos and whatever else he can see. And the purpose is he studies it so that he can advise us of anything of a physical nature he sees that could rise to a risk factor. Not that we do anything, but we just wanted to be prepared. And he said, I have studied everything and there's only one thing that worries me. And that is the fact that this baby has unusually short legs. And that can be indicative of Down syndrome. Those were two words I did not want to hear that day. And that doctor looked right at me. And he said some words I'll never forget. He said, now that I'm meeting the father of this child, I'm not going to make those unusually legs a risk factor at all. Well, excuse me, Dr. Smarty Pants. But we had a clean bill of health, and it was smooth sailing ahead. And the next stop was the delivery room. And it was that day that I learned the pecking order of who is supposed to tell the parents that their baby isn't quite what they were expecting. And it's not the delivery doctor who's tying stuff up and chatting away. And it's not the delivery nurses who are quietly slapping on bonnets and baby booties and blankets. And it's not the APGAR nurse. Every dad in this room probably has a video of an APGAR nurse. And that's the nurse that stands behind the glass doing a lot of measuring and figuring and weighing. And then she tells us what his APGAR score is, as if we have any clue what the word APGAR even means. But his APGAR was 9 point something, which was like the rest of our kids. And that was good enough for me, thumbs up. A little while later, when I got back to the hospital room, I learned who drew the short straw. Because there is our pediatrician, and he got there really fast, and he looked really serious. And scarier than that is the fact that Elizabeth is propped up in her bed because she has gotten the news, and the only thing she cares about right now is what her A-type personality lawyer husband's reaction is going to be. So our wonderful pediatrician began as he always did, "Congratulations, you have another beautiful baby. There is a 50-50 chance that John has Down syndrome. There are some physical characteristics, short legs, but we won't know for sure until the genetic tests come back in 2 days. I wish I could stand before y'all today and testify that because of a decision I made 7 years before this, this was pretty easy. And I just said, hallelujah, our son may have a major disability. But I wasn't ready to do that. Elizabeth was closer to it because we had miscarried a child, and she would tell you that it was far more traumatic to have to miscarry a child than to have and raise a child with Down syndrome, and she would be 100% correct. We asked the nurses to kind of keep people away. We didn't want visitors. I didn't know how to talk about it. We wanted to hold phone calls. It was kind of a pretty much close friend and relative need-to-know basis. And when I crawled into bed that night, and I use that term loosely, there is a very uncomfortable chair at Piedmont Hospital, and it folds out into an incredibly uncomfortable bed. It's one of the only times I'm glad I'm short, because at least I can deal with it vertically. And I crawled into that thing, and I prayed really hard. And thinking back, it was reminiscent to me of Jesus when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed to his Father the first time, where he said, "Father, please take this cup from me. I don't know if I'm ready for this." And I prayed, "God, you are the God of great miracles. This should be a no-brainer. 50-50, come on, just put him over on this 50% part where he doesn't have this. That's an easy thing." The next day we had a lot of visitors, a lot of encouragement. And some people describe it as, you have spent 9 months planning a trip to Italy and the plane gets rerouted to Holland. And you're a little bit upset you're not in Italy, but you know what, you still have a great trip. And some people explained it that you expected this child and it didn't make it. And there's a natural period of sadness and some mourning that you can go through. But then you realize God delivered you this child over here to raise, and you rejoice in that. And that's a good way to describe it. So when I crawled in my iron coffin with spikes on the inside that second night, I prayed differently than I did the first night. And it was closer to when Jesus prayed in the garden the second time, when he said, "Father, if this is your will for my life, I accept it. just help me through it. And I prayed, dear Lord, if this is your plan for me, I'll do it. But please show me what I need to do to be the best father I can be to this child who's going to be different than our other four children. And somehow I fell asleep in that contraption. And the only way I can explain what happened next is that there was proof to me of the existence of God. Because it was as if he looked down from heaven and focused specifically on me in that time. And he sent to me what I can only describe as a vision. It was not like any dream I'd ever had. I don't dream much, especially in a torture chamber. And that vision was clear and it was vivid and it was full color, and I remember every bit of it. And through that vision, he gave me an answer to my prayer. How can I be the best father I can? And the answer was really clear. Love your wife. Stay close to your wife. Don't drown her. Don't crush her. Don't blame her. You have a long but beautiful journey ahead of you. And only together will you make it. That is the answer that he gave me. And when I woke up the next day, it's hard to describe this, but all of the fear and the anxiety, all of the pride and the selfishness that I had was gone, and it never came back again. God prepared me for what lay ahead, and I was ready for it. And we still didn't have the results. And then they came back, and they were Down syndrome. But I was ready for that. And if I had to change any of that, I would never, ever change it. That decision of God, call it a gigantic change order in my plan, was really a great change order in my life. And I do believe that through raising a son with Down syndrome and all the extra stuff and love you do has helped make me a better man and a better father and a better husband. I'm looking over here to see if they're shaking their heads. And he made Elizabeth the best mother, best wife any man could ever ask for. And he made all four of our children better people because they had a little brother that needed extra love and extra kindness and protection. And they just loved him. From the moment they met him, they didn't care if he was going to be different. And John is 19 now. And he is incredible, keeps me patient, keeps me going. And when I walk in, man, he jumps up and comes over and bear hugs me. He's 19, bear hugging me, almost knocks me down now. But it's incredible. There's one other challenge I faced that I would like to share with you all this morning, because I know I'm not the only one in this room that has faced or is facing this challenge. I did not grow up in a good relationship with my father. As you know, he left my mom with three little kids. He moved 1,000 miles away. He would be divorced 4 times. He made things financially difficult, so mom always struggled to make sure we got through school and got through college. And before we had our first grandchild, he sold everything he had in America, which was a lot, and bought 20,000 acres in Zimbabwe for a hunting ranch. And you can't get more distant from your children and your grandchildren than that. And I think I saw him 4, maybe 5 times over that course of 30 years that they lived over there. And so, yes, I was bitter and I was resentful. And when I became a believer and started studying the Bible real carefully, it became very clear to me that I was not following something. And it is the fifth commandment, one of the top ten. And it's the fifth commandment that says, honor your father and your mother. And that's a hard one. It means we need to respect them, even if we don't agree with all of the decisions they make. We need to somehow honor them. And it's number five, not by happenstance, okay? It's chiseled on a stone a long time ago, and it follows the top four, that we honor our God and we have no other gods before Him. And it is the first commandment about dealing with people and our neighbors, because God put our parents as the people in charge of us, our authority, after Him. So that was tough, and I really struggled with that. And I went to a lot of men's fraternity groups, which I recommend to any man in here. And we do little bucket lists of things we need to do to better ourselves and do things better. And always near the top of the list is, I need to reconcile with my father and forgive him for some stuff. And yet, that is one of the hardest things I have ever grappled with, I promise you. And it was easy when he lived in Africa, because heck, what can I do about that? He made it back to America. He lost everything, just about, and he made it back to America less than 2 years before he passed away. And I had a couple of visits with him, and I still couldn't bring up that topic. And I thought I had a lot of time, and then I got the call. Now, I don't want to sound preachy up here, but if anybody here is dealing with something like that with a father or a mother or a child or another loved one, deal with it, please. Don't wait for the call. The call came from Janet, his fifth wife. I thank the Lord that he finally found a soulmate that stuck for over 30 years, and we love Janet. And she said, your father has fallen, he's hit his head, he's had a stroke, and he's going to the hospital. And we couldn't get away immediately because our sister's son was getting married the next day in Chattanooga. So we did the wedding, and literally my brother Jimmy, who is here now, we dropped off our families in Atlanta and kept going to Florida. I had a mission. And on the way down, I'm praying, God, please forgive me for not doing this before now. Just keep him alive. And we got there in the middle of the night, and we rushed up to his hospice room, and Janet said he was still with us. And that she said, I think he can listen, because when I say something emotional, he'll tear up. Including when I tell him, hang on, your sons are coming. So I took his hand in mine, and it's the only time I can really remember holding his hand. And I said, Dad, I love you, and I forgive you for anything that you've ever done and anything you haven't done. And I hope you forgive me, because I am so sorry about a lot of stuff. And I talked to him about Jesus. And then Jimmy came up and talked with him and spoke with him. And 20 minutes after we got there, Dad passed away very, very peacefully. And the only way I can explain it is that God was there again. And he kept Dad there. Not just because I had something to unpack or Jimmy had something to unpack, but I think he needed Dad to be unburdened of a lot of regrets and stuff that had gone on most of his life. And he passed away very peacefully. I really hope, I do hope, that I will see him in heaven and be reunited. But I don't know, because I don't know what was on his heart in those last minutes of his life. But I do know this. I do know that I will get an answer to that question someday. because 26 years ago, as the result of a prayer breakfast a lot like this, I made a decision to follow Jesus Christ, and I was handed a one-way ticket for free to eternal life in heaven. In his heart, a man plans his course, but the Lord determines his steps. Proverbs 16:9. It has been a very huge privilege having the opportunity to share these personal remarks with you all this morning, and I thank you very much.